turn to the book of Numbers, chapter 32. Book of Numbers, chapter 32. I'd like to read the first 15 verses. Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. When they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. The children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and Eleazar the priest, and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth, and Dibon, and Jabzer, and Nimrah, and Heshbon, and Eli, and Shebam, and Nebo, and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, Shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Thus did your fathers, when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up unto the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel, that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he sware, saying, Surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, save Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. And the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. Behold, ye are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful man, to augment yet the fierce anger of the Lord toward Israel. For if you turn away from after him, he will not yet again leave them in the wilderness. He will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and ye shall destroy all this people. By way of background to the book of Numbers, Israel had dwelt in Egypt for 430 years. 400 of those years in which they lived as slaves in affliction. But as we know, God would raise up a man by the name of Moses to lead Israel out of the terrible Egyptian bondage into a promised land of blessing. And God informed Moses of such. Notice in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 8. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 8. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land unto a good land, a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. We see in verse 17, And I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt unto the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. So they have this promise that God would deliver them from bondage, and that God would deliver them into a land of promise. It was a good land. It was a large land. It was a land flowing with milk and honey. In time, of course, God would redeem Israel out of Egyptian bondage in a miraculous way by the sprinkling of blood and bringing them through the Red Sea on dry ground. And after coming out of Egyptian bondage, we read in Exodus 16, if we turn there, Exodus 16 and verse 1, that after they were delivered out of Egyptian bondage, about a month later, they would arrive in the wilderness of Sinai. Exodus 16, verse 1, and they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month. 15th day of the second month, which is about a month later than when they left, after their departing out of the land of Egypt. About a month later, they would arrive at Mount Sinai. Notice in Exodus 19 in verse 1. In the third month, we just saw the second month. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they unto the wilderness of Sinai. And as you read the history here in the book of Exodus, you would see that Israel would remain at Mount Sinai for just over 11 months. Just over 11 months. So by the time we come to the book of Numbers, Israel has been at the base of Sinai for nearly a year. What transpired in that time? Well, it was then that they received the laws that are recorded in the book of Exodus and the book of Leviticus. And by comparing Exodus chapter 40, verse 17, notice if we turn there, Exodus 40, verse 17, and it came to pass in the first month in the second year. We're in a new year now. In the first month in the second year, on the first day of the month, that the tabernacle was reared up. Now compare that with Numbers chapter 1 and verse 1. Numbers chapter 1 and verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. Again, they've been there about 11 months. In the tabernacle of the congregation on the first day of the second month in the second year, after they were come out of the land of Egypt. We see that the book of Numbers commences 1 month after the tabernacle had been erected, or about 13 months after Israel's deliverance from Egypt. And that's where the book of Numbers picks up. About 13 months after the children of Israel have left Egypt. And the book of Numbers begins with God instructing Moses to take a census of all the males 20 years and older from all the tribes, with the exception of the tribe, with the exception of the Levites. 19 days later, after this census, the Israelites would depart from Mount Sinai and begin to head to the promised land. Notice in Numbers chapter 10. Numbers chapter 10. I hope I'm not losing you here at the very beginning. But in Numbers chapter 10, verses 11 and 12. And it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month, in the second year. Now remember Numbers 1 verse 1, they were on the first day of that same month. So now we're the 20th day, we're 19 days later. 19 days later, the Israelites would set out for the promised land from Mount Sinai. According to Deuteronomy 1 and verse 2, the normal trip from that point would have been 11 days. But we know that it took them far longer than 11 days. The book of Numbers summarizes the experience of the children of Israel in the wilderness during the 39 years after their departure from Mount Sinai. And though the incidents in Numbers cover almost 39 years, 37 of those years are mostly ignored in the book of Numbers. Chapters 10 through 19 are a record of the year after the Exodus from Egypt. And everything after chapter 20, verse 1, is the 40th year. All the other years are not recorded. So we have the first year after they left Egypt recorded. We have the 40th year. The first 25 chapters basically chronicle the experience of the first generation of Israel in the wilderness, while the rest of the book describes the experiences of the second generation. Coming to our text, a new generation of Israelites has reached the border of the promised land. And we are told specifically of an incident involving the tribes of Reuben and Gad. These things are recorded for our learning. This particular incident in our text has a tremendous spiritual application for us and serves as a warning to all of God's people. A warning that we ought to give earnest heed to. The incident here recorded ought to cause us to carefully examine our own hearts. The thought of the message will center around the shocking request of the tribes of Reuben and Gad, found in verse 5. Their request was, "Let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession." And then notice what it says. "And bring us not over Jordan." We want to stay here. We don't want to enter the promised land. I want to speak this morning on the wrong side of Jordan. The wrong side of Jordan. Consider, first of all, the position of Israel at this time. In Numbers chapter 31, God had blessed them abundantly. In Numbers 31, God had instructed Moses to go to war against Midian. And Moses was only to use 12,000 men, 1,000 men from each tribe. And God gave Israel an unbelievable victory. Without the loss of a single Israelite, they defeated the Midianites. Along with this victory, as you read Numbers 31, we're not going to go there for time's sake, there came a great spoil, or there was much material gain for the children of Israel. We read in Numbers 31 that there were 675,000 sheep as spoil. There were 72,000 heads of cattle, 61,000 donkeys. In addition to all of this, there was an abundance of gold. And we read in verse 53 of chapter 31, "For the men of war had taken spoil, every man for himself." And beside all this, beside all this great spoil, this material gain, Israel has now been brought through the dry desert. They have been brought through desolation. They have been brought through trouble. They have been brought through distress. They have been brought through difficulty and sufferings and hardships. The tide has changed for the nation of Israel. And they are now in the highlands of what would be known as the Transjordan area. And this was a grassy place. This was a place of rolling hills and valleys. This would be a place of refreshment. This is paradise compared to what they've been through. And here they are. They are at a place of opportunity. The Jordan River established the entry point into the promised land, the land of Canaan. Again, that's that good land, that large land, that land that flows with milk and honey. It is described in Deuteronomy chapter 6 as a place of great and goodly cities. Houses that are full that you built not. Vineyards that are flourishing that you planted not in. This is a place of blessing. It is the place that God had promised them. For the child of God, it is a picture. Not a picture of heaven, but it is a picture of the enjoyment of the blessings of God. It is a picture of the child of God possessing God's very best for us. It is a picture of a higher plane of living. It is a picture of living life in fellowship with God. A picture of walking in the light of God's countenance. It is a picture of having daily communion with the Lord. It is a picture of enjoying the blessings of the Lord upon our lives. You see, Canaan represents to you and I that are saved the spiritually abundant life. It represents a flourishing life, spiritually speaking. The promised land, the land of Canaan, represents to you and I living life in the peace and the joy and the power and the glory of the Lord. It is the land of promise, the land of Canaan, and it represents the best possible life that you and I can live upon this earth. And over, God reminded Israel of the opportunity and of their responsibility toward this promised land. He told them on several occasions, it is your responsibility to go in and possess this land. In fact, possessing the promised land is mentioned 31 times in the book of Deuteronomy. This was their opportunity to possess that promised land, to possess God's very best for them. It was their responsibility as well. The abundant life that Canaan represents is our opportunity to possess. And it is our responsibility to possess. But oh, how often we fail to possess what God has for us. Again, for time's sake, we'll not go there, but read Psalm 81, verses 11 through 16. And you see that Israel missed the blessings of God because they would not obey. They would not go forward to possess the land. When we come to our text, right before the Israelites with spiritual abundance, just on the other side of the Jordan River, was more. And now it is their opportunity. It is their privilege. It is their responsibility to cross the Jordan River and to enter the promised land, God's best for them. That's the position of Israel at this time in the book of Numbers. Consider the response of Reuben and Gad to this wonderful opportunity. Consider the request that they made to Moses. Again, here are a people. They are the chosen people of God. They have been brought through a dry and sandy desert. God, with a mighty hand, has brought this people through many, many trials and difficulties. God in His grace, God in His mercy and long-suffering, has miraculously provided for them along the way. And after many, many years of lingering in the desert, they are now in the highlands of the Transjordan, blessed of God. Their lives have been lovingly touched by God. Before them is the Jordan River. And the other side of that river is God's promised land. That good land. That great land. That land flowing with milk and honey. That land that represents spiritual abundance. Just on the other side is God's very best for them. But here, this chosen, blood-bought, delivered, and redeemed people, as they make this shocking request to Moses, bring us not over Jordan. After years of wandering, they have finally arrived. God has promised and given them the land just beyond that Jordan River. It's theirs. But we have this stunning request of Reuben and Gad. Bring us not over Jordan. Just beyond Jordan is a better life. But again, hear this startling and unbelievable request of Reuben and Gad. Bring us not over Jordan. They were saying, the land of promise, the land that God has been promising us, it's just over there. But we don't want to leave here. We know that the promised land is just over there. But Moses, we don't want to leave here. We want to stay here. Moses, we want to settle here. Moses, we know that that promised land is just over there. But Moses, we would rather stay here than pursue what God has for us on the other side. That is a shocking request. However, not an uncommon one. Sad to say, it is a very common response. Consider the reason behind their response. Bring us not over Jordan. After surviving the desert for years, and now they're in the grassy knolls of the Transjordan, I imagine that the tribes of Reuben and Gad, they've been noticing for several days now how attractive this area was. This is a nice place. This is a lot better than that desert. This is a pretty nice area. And they no doubt began to consider how beneficial and how advantageous this area could be to them. Keep in mind that they have just been blessed with the spoils of cattle. And it is twice stated in verse 1 and in verse 4, verse 1, the end of the verse, behold, the place was a place for cattle. And verse 4 is a land for cattle. So they reasoned, here is a wonderful place for cattle. And we have cattle. Can't get any better than this. Moses, this is where we want to stay. We don't want to cross over the Jordan. Yes, we know the promised land's on the other side, but Moses, we're satisfied right here. We have cattle. This is a land that is good for cattle. We'll stay here. The tribes of Reuben and Gad, they wanted to stay where they were. They said, bring us not over Jordan.
Their request was based entirely upon material factors. To them, it was a matter of simple economics. The land where they had, where they were, had rich potential, and they saw it as an opportunity to build wealth and security for their future. So they said, the land of promise, Moses, we know it's right over there, but Moses, we don't want to leave here. We want to stay here. We want to settle down here. We would rather stay here than pursue what God has for us on the other side. You see, life had now become all about cattle and grass for Reuben and Gad. Life had become all about their material needs. And life had become all about their desires. Life had become all about a particular lifestyle. And they said, Moses, we want to stay here where we can raise our cattle, where we can secure our financial security. Bring us not over Jordan. In other words, Moses, don't make us go. This is where we want to stay. Yes, on the other side is God's very best for his people. But Reuben and Gad began to minimize and trivialize the spiritual blessing that was right before them. And they were willing to settle for the temporal in place of the spiritual. They were saying, because this land is advantageous to our cattle, and since it is advantageous to our cattle, it is advantageous to our financial security. Moses, we want to stay here. We want to stay on this side of Jordan. With God's best right before them, they said, we would rather stay on this side of Jordan. We would rather stay in the land of materialism. We would rather stay in the land that borders God's very best. We would rather stay in the land that borders the land of promise than to pursue what's on the other side. Moses, do not make us go over that other side. This is where we want to stay. Because of self-interest, they were willing to live on the wrong side of Jordan. What we see here again is all too common today. They allowed the grassy land and the cattle to determine where they would settle. Because of grass and cattle, they were willing to raise their families on the wrong side of Jordan. Moses, this is a grassy area. This is a great area for cattle. We have cattle. And Moses, we would rather stay here. We want to raise our families on this side of Jordan. Yes, we realize that on the other side is the promised land. But Moses, please understand, we want to raise our families on this side of Jordan. That's very common today. Modern day grass and cattle takes on many, many different forms. And oh, how many allow modern day grass and cattle determine which side of Jordan they will live on. And they settle for the wrong side of Jordan. Notice Moses rebukes the tribes of Reuben and Gad. After their request, bring us not over Jordan, Moses saw the attitude that fed such a request. He saw it as an attitude that was inconsiderate of their brethren. He said in verse 6, and Moses said unto the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war and shall you sit here? Are you so inconsiderate that you will let your brethren cross over the Jordan and go to war with Jericho while you sit here and enjoy the grass and cattle? Are you that inconsiderate? May I say that God's people who choose to live on the wrong side of Jordan, they are an inconsiderate people of their brethren. He also, Moses saw this as something that would erode the morale of the brethren. Something that would weaken their resolve to go on.
Notice verse 7. And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over the land which the Lord hath given them?
I don't know if there's anything more discouraging than people who just want to live on the wrong side of Jordan. And Moses is saying, you are going to discourage your brethren. They're not even going to want to go on. They're not going to want to cross over to the other side. You are a discouragement to your brethren. He also, their request, bring us not over Jordan because of self-interest. They were willing to settle on the wrong side of Jordan, which would be a bad influence upon the brethren. And that's what Moses is telling them. Oh, how we need to see that settling on the wrong side of Jordan is a terrible influence. It is a terrible influence upon God's people. With God's best for them just on the other side of Jordan, Reuben and Gad, because they had lost sight of what should be first, which was to possess the land, they said, Moses, don't make us go over Jordan. And Moses saw this attitude as something that would kindle the anger and the judgment of God. Notice verse 8. Thus did your fathers. You're just like your fathers, is what Moses is saying. You're just like your moms and dads. Back in Numbers 14, they had the opportunity to go across. They had the opportunity to possess the land. But they weren't interested. They fell because of unbelief, with the exception of two, Joshua and Caleb. And you're just like them, is what Moses is saying. He goes on, and he says, they also, in verse 11, discourage the heart of the children of Israel. And you're going to do the same thing. And in verse 10, and the Lord's anger was kindled. You're acting just like your fathers. And your father's behavior brought down the anger of God. In fact, it was your father's behavior that is the reason you have wandered for these last 39 years. And now you have opportunity. And you say you want to stay on this side of Jordan. Why? Why would you bring down the anger and judgment of God just like your fathers? This is what Moses is saying to them in verses 8 through 11 and also in verse 13 and 14. We need to realize today that settling on the wrong side of Jordan places you in great danger. It places you in the danger of God's judgment. Now let's make application to everything that we've said. Right now, just as it was so here with the children of Israel, right now, at this present moment, you and I that know the Lord, there is a life of spiritual abundance that we can have. It's ours to possess. A life of fellowship with God. A life of personal relationship with God. A life of spiritual peace. A life of spiritual growth. A life of joy. And power, a life of victory, and a life of glory. For each one of us that know the Lord, there is more. There is more, not only in eternity, we know that, But we need to see right now there is more for us here. There is an abundant life. We have opportunity to possess it. It is our responsibility to possess it. For the saved, there is a life of enjoying God's best for us. That life is just over there. It's just over there. And just as God told Israel, go in and possess it. That is what God is saying to us. He's saying, it's just over there. Go pursue it. Go possess it. But just like Reuben and Gad, many have chosen modern day grass and cattle over the spiritual abundance of God. And with Reuben and Gad, they say, bring us not over Jordan. They view their position in the world as more beneficial than the abundant life. They view the temporal as more worthy of pursuit than the blessings of God. And they say with Reuben and Gad, bring us not over this Jordan. They say with Reuben and Gad, we prefer to stay on this side of Jordan. We prefer to stay in the land of the carnal. We prefer to stay in the land of vanity. We prefer to stay in the land of profit and pleasure. We would rather stay here than pursue God's very best for us. Like Reuben and Gad, many times we settle for less than God's best. And we choose the grass and the cattle over the land of Canaan. Like Reuben and Gad, many times people's interests are on the wrong side of Jordan. And there are some here right now, I am sure, your interests are on the wrong side of Jordan. Just over there is the abundant spiritual life. But the problem is, your interests aren't over there. Your interests are here. They had their interest on the wrong side of Jordan. They had their affections on the wrong side of Jordan. They had their desires on the wrong side of Jordan. They had their pursuits on the wrong side of Jordan. And therefore, they chose to live on the wrong side of Jordan. They try to build their marriages on the wrong side of Jordan. They try to raise their families on the wrong side of Jordan. And in the context, Moses would later say, be sure your sin will find you out. That is dwelling on the wrong side of Jordan. Sadly today, many of God's people live and die on the wrong side of Jordan. I ask you today, on what side of Jordan are your interests? On what side of Jordan are your affections? On what side of Jordan are your desires? On what side of Jordan are your pursuits? We read concerning the wrong side of Jordan, verse 1, the place was a place for cattle. And in verse 4, in a land for cattle. Yes, it was a place for cattle. It was a place for herds. It was a place for animals. It's not the place for God's people. The other side of Jordan. And it's sad today. And it is so discouraging when God's people in mass say, we want to live in this side of Jordan. Oh, we know what you're saying. We know that it's better over there. But this side of Jordan is the best opportunity for our kids. This side of Jordan is what is the best opportunity for us. No, that's never so. That's never so. You're always better off settling on the other side of Jordan. But many today are willing to settle on the wrong side of Jordan. I ask you today, on what side of Jordan do you live? What side of Jordan do you want to raise your children? This side? There's grass. There's cattle. It's the side the world would choose. Over there is God's very best. You got to believe that by faith, though. Which side of Jordan will you raise your family? You say, well, I raised my kids on the other side of Jordan. Didn't do me much good because now they live on the wrong side of Jordan. That may be so. But I don't want my children living on the wrong side of Jordan because they were raised there. If they're going to live on the other side of Jordan, they're going to choose to live on the wrong side of Jordan. Don't raise your children on the wrong side of Jordan. Don't try to build your marriage on the wrong side of Jordan. Don't look for a husband. Don't look for a wife. Don't look for a job on the other side, on the wrong side of Jordan. Get away from the wrong side of Jordan. Move from the wrong side of Jordan. It's time to move for many of God's people. They need to move. They need to back up the van and move to the right side of Jordan. They've been on the wrong side long enough. How long are you going to stay there? Be sure. Be sure your sin will find you out. It will be manifest which side of Jordan you have lived on. So I ask you today, where are your interests? Where are your desires? What side of Jordan do you long to live on? We've been talking to God's people. You're here today without Christ. Your greatest need is to see yourself as a sinner and come to Jesus Christ, depending completely, entirely upon who He is and what He has done. I ask you today, are you saved? Are you saved? Do you know the Lord? Have you experienced the salvation that is only in Christ? You examine your heart today, Brother Larry, if you'd come.